are listening to Lighthearted, the official podcast of the United States Lighthouse Society. My name is Jeremy Dontremont. Welcome. Today is April 14th, 2024, and this is episode 273 of Lighthearted. I have a very, very special guest co-host today, Emily Strait, who happens to be the co-host of another Lighthouse podcast, The Lighthouse Lowdown. Hi, Emily.
Hey, Jeremy. It's good to be here.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. You know, I think a lot of our listeners will remember that you and your partner in crime, Vince Bailey, were interviewed for this podcast about, I think it was about 3 weeks ago. I hope that experience wasn't too traumatic for you.
Oh, no. No, we had a ton of fun. Usually, you know, we're just talking to each other, so it's nice to talk lighthouses with someone else.
No, I agree. You know, I think we're kind of members of the same club. We are going to listen today to a conversation with Edward Pepitt, who hosts the third Lighthouse podcast. To the best of my knowledge, there are three in the world, and he hosts a podcast in the UK called Keeping Watch. And as I told him, and as I just said, we are members of a very exclusive club.
Yeah, and I didn't even know about Keeping Watch until we did our episode, so there's maybe even more out there.
Possibly. I even found them. Maybe, you know, if somebody's listening and they do a Lighthouse podcast, please tell us.
But
yeah, you know, I think there's plenty of room for probably like an infinite number of Lighthouse podcasts, because I think there's an infinite number of stories about lighthouses, and everybody brings their own unique slants and personalities to it.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we all have different subjects and talk about different events. So I think there's a little bit of something for every listener in there.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking, you and Vince, with your podcast, The Lighthouse Lowdown, and Ed Pepitt with his podcast, Keeping Watch, you guys were much smarter than me when you started out, because you limit yourself to one episode every 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Ed Pepitt has done 2 13-show seasons, and he's on a break right now, but he's about to do another 13-show season. I was really quite dumb to say, you know, at the beginning I said, well, I'm going to do a podcast every week, a new episode every week. And here it is just about 5 years later, and I have not missed a week.
Wow.
And I feel like I put way too much pressure on myself.
Yeah, you picked a really aggressive schedule, because I know that we started with one episode per week for just maybe 2 weeks. And I was like, okay, I can't do it.
Well, if I was smart, I would have realized the same thing early on. But it's not that I don't enjoy it. I enjoy it very much. You know, I just love doing this. So at this point, I'd like to introduce today's interview. Please help me out, Emily.
Sure, Jeremy. Edward Pepitt is the Southeast England representative for the Association of Lighthouse Keepers, or ALK. He's also a fundraising ambassador for Shift MS, a charity aimed at keeping multiple sclerosis sufferers as active as possible. And Ed also has more than 25 years of experience as a nonfiction publisher.
And as I mentioned earlier, Ed produces and hosts a podcast called Keeping Watch for the ALK. This is described as a podcast for anyone and everyone interested in lighthouses, lighthouse keepers, light vessels, and other aids to maritime navigation.
Ed has also written a new book called The Beacon Bike. It tells the incredible story of his 3,500-mile bicycle ride to explore the lighthouses around the coast of England and Wales, proving that a diagnosis of MS doesn't mean giving up on a lifelong dream. Ed's bike ride took him to 327 lighthouses over 100 days.
It's absolutely incredible what he did. And yeah, the book amazing. Is about to come out. So we talked quite a bit about that in the interview. But it blows me away to think of what he did. Never mind, you know, the MS aside, to think about doing a 3,500-mile bike ride to 327 lighthouses, you know.
Yeah, I could never.
I thought I was doing pretty well to drive to 60 lighthouses in a month on the West Coast one time, but it's not quite the same thing. Anyway, so I really enjoyed speaking with Ed Pepitt a couple of weeks ago. He's an absolutely amazing guy. Let's listen to our conversation now. I'm speaking today with Ed Pepitt, author, podcast host, and the Southeast England representative for the Association of Lighthouse Keepers. Thanks for joining me today, Ed.
Well, thanks for inviting me on the podcast.
Well, it's a real pleasure. You know, I believe you and I almost met when I was in Southeast England almost 2 years ago.
Yes, it was one of those things. I'd been putting off COVID for as long as I possibly could, and the week before you came, I finally succumbed. So, yes, we didn't quite meet up.
Well, by the way, people might be able to hear I'm fighting a cold today, but I actually tested myself this morning. I do not have COVID officially. Well, so,
amen to that.
Yes, I agree. So, Ed, you know, I really love your podcast. It's beautifully produced. You're a great host. You're so knowledgeable and very personable with everybody and everything. You know, you and I are part of a very exclusive club of people who host Lighthouse podcasts. There's not a lot of us. I recently interviewed two young people who host a podcast called The Lighthouse Lowdown. I don't know if you've caught that, but
no, I'm going to have to add it to my list straight away.
Yeah, they live in Kansas City, Missouri, believe it or not, which is almost smack dab in the middle of the United States.
Right.
So I found it surprising that they do a Lighthouse podcast, but they're really into it. They do a good job. And as I told them, there's plenty of room for all three of our podcasts, and there's room for more if people want to do it. I think you'd agree that there are endless stories related to lighthouses. And, you know, everybody, you and I and the others bring our own slant to these as well.
So. Oh, completely. And I mean, the fact that you've done, I mean, the last time I saw you'd done about 200 episodes. I mean, the fact that you've done so many episodes kind of reinforces the view that there's plenty of material.
Yeah, I'm not running out. It's actually close to 300 now.
Well, there you go.
But, you know, I set myself up. I put pressure on myself when I started because I do it every week. You were much smarter than that. You've completed two seasons of 12 episodes each.
Well,
and I was going to say if I had half a brain, I would have done something similar when I started.
Well, it's through watching other people start and then either running out of steam or just knowing my own inability to keep something going. I thought if I set myself a season, call it 12 episodes, and then take a break between seasons, I reckoned I could keep it going. And, well, so far so good. We've had two seasons. They've been well received. But you're right. I mean, we are a very niche podcast subject, yes, if you like. But there's a lot of interest out there and a lot of love. And it's really the heritage that I find so appealing, the fact that, you know, we are, particularly in the UK, we are losing former lighthouse keepers every month that goes by.
Absolutely. Yeah, I want to get back to all that, definitely, in just a couple of minutes. But if we could kind of back up a little bit, maybe talk a little bit about your background. I understand that lighthouses entered your consciousness pretty early in life. Is that right?
It really is. I mean, the die was cast when I used to have my school holidays living with my grandmother, and I had an attic bedroom, and she lived down on the coast in Kent, and aged, I suppose, 5, 6, 7, something like that. I was just aware that my bedroom wall flashed every 10 seconds. And I was dumbfounded for a while as to what could possibly be such a sort of regular rhythm. And then I realized that it was the lighthouse at Dungeness, which is about 9 or 10 miles from where my grandmother lived. You know, an obsession began just from that experience.
I visited the Dungeness Lighthouse when I was there. I was lucky enough to take the miniature steam railway that stopped there.
Yeah, that, I mean, I lived down on that stretch of coast, as you know, and the railway that you're referring to goes almost past my back garden.
Oh, wow. I really love that. That was such a great experience.
It's fun.
Very much.
It's fun.
So can you tell me about your wedding and honeymoon?
Yes, of course. My wife-to-be was desperate to please me years before we got married and discovered that you could stay in a lighthouse on Lundy Island in the Bristol Channel, which is on the sort of north coast of Devon and off Devon and Cornwall. And we had a holiday there and just fell in love with this little island. I mean, it's an island a mile and a half long. It's sort of half a mile wide. It's 15, 16 miles off the North Devon coast. And it has three lighthouses, two of which are operational and one former lighthouse. And the former lighthouse has been very sympathetically restored by a heritage group called the Landmark Trust in the UK. And we had a holiday in that lighthouse. And then we were just desperate to then have our wedding ceremony on the island. There is a beautiful Victorian church on the island. And somehow we managed to persuade 60 members of our family and friends to get on a ferry, or some were lucky enough to get on a helicopter, and have a weekend wedding where we got married on the Saturday, had the wedding breakfast and food in the pub on the island. And it was great because every single person staying on the island was in some way or other connected to the wedding party. And so the conversation was never, you know, how do you know the bride or the groom? It was, how sick were you on the ferry coming out to the island? It was a force 8 gale on the journey out, and they would not have run the ferry that we chartered had it not been a wedding. if it had been a regular passage, they would have cancelled that day, but they felt duty bound to make the attempt. So it was a very, very rough crossing indeed.
I'm glad nothing worse than a little seasickness happened.
Well, this is true.
Yeah, but other than the weather, it sounds absolutely perfect to me.
It was, and it did brighten up during the week, but it was out of season. I mean, the only way we could do it was to do it out of season, and so there were no scheduled day trips or anybody else staying on the island for the whole of the week that followed, so we waved our party off back to Ilfracombe on the Devon coast, and Emily and I had our honeymoon on our own on this island. So it was really splendid.
Yeah, it's it sounds absolutely perfect to me. So if you could tell me a little bit about the work you've done as a publisher of nonfiction.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is in educational publishing. I was publishing director of Let's, which for those in the UK will know, is a publisher of home study guides, books to get you through the various exams in this country. And from there, I would have probably remained in a corporate publishing career, but was diagnosed in 2012 with multiple sclerosis, and just took a sort of, I guess, life-changing decision to quit commuting to London, quit living in London. And I have worked in publishing of one sort or another, but in a freelance capacity, working largely from home. And it's worked really well. I've worked for some of the best known publishers in the UK, at least, and it served me well for, well, 15 or 20 years so far.
Mm-hmm. I do want to revisit your MS diagnosis shortly here, but let's talk a little bit about the ALK right now.
Ah, yeah. Great organization. Lovely. Absolutely. Organization. Yeah.
The Association of Lighthouse Keepers, and I have had other representatives of the ALK on this podcast, including ex-lighthouse keepers.
Some you have which, indeed.
Yeah, some of whom we've both interviewed.
Was, indeed.
Yeah. But for people who don't know, I think probably most of our listeners know, but for people who don't know, can you describe what is the ALK?
Yes. As you say, it's short for the Association of Lighthouse Keepers. It was the creation of a former keeper himself, Neil Hargreaves, who really initially just wanted a means of staying in touch with all his former colleagues and friends who worked in the lighthouse service, who were all during the 1990s being let go and made redundant one by one as automation came in. And it very, very quickly grew to an interest organization rather than an organization just for former lighthouse keepers. And the membership has grown year on year. And it's really a heritage organization. It's like an enlarged family of people with an interest in lighthouses, light vessels, the lighthouse service. And it has it's inherited quite a sizable museum of artifacts from Trinity House when Trinity House closed their museum in Penzance in Cornwall. And it organises events to lighthouses. It runs talks. It meets up several times a year. In fact, I've just come back this last weekend from Bidston Hill Lighthouse near Liverpool, where we've had an archive weekend where we have been busy taking lighthouse-related paperwork and artifacts and digitising them. I've come home from Liverpool with four boxes wedged full of VHS tapes, which I perhaps unwisely agreed to digitise. It'll keep me amused for a few months. So it's a wonderful organisation, and it's just, well, it's really my second family.
Mm-hmm. So how did you become involved with the ALK?
Well, it's one of those organizations that you join, you very quickly make friends and establish friendships. And I just happened to join at a time when my predecessor, representative of the southeast of England, had retired and didn't want to do it anymore. And there was a vacancy. It's not the most arduous commitment one can make in life, and I was very happy to do it. And so I joined initially so that they would help me to find accommodation and promote, if you like, my cycle ride, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. But I very quickly got involved with areas where I thought I could help.
Sure. So moving on, or moving back to the podcast, how did that come about? Was that your idea?
It was my idea. The podcast came about because I tried and was unsuccessful in sustaining a publishing-related podcast, merely because I ran out of steam and what I thought would be an enjoyable every week process. I think I got to about episode 7 and just thought, this is taking up too much of my time. But I then helped others produce their podcasts. So I actually produce 4 other podcasts in wildly unrelated to lighthouses topics. But I always thought that there should be a podcast relating to lighthouses. I found yours and enjoyed it immensely and do enjoy it immensely. But I thought there was room for a UK-based one, and I thought that the ALK would be receptive towards it. I was going to do it as a solo project, but talking to friends in the ALK, it was very, very easy to decide to make it an ALK official podcast, if you like, just because of the network it opened and the access it gave and gives to former keepers. Whenever there is a topic I want to talk about, someone in the ALK will know someone who would be good to talk to. And so that's how it really came about.
Right. Yeah. You definitely know the right people to.
Exactly.
People who know people.
Exactly.
Yeah. So speaking of that, I hesitate to ask this. And you don't have to answer it if you don't want to. I'm sure you've enjoyed all the interviews you've done. But do you have maybe a couple of favorites or ones that really stand out in your memory?
Yes, I do. I really enjoyed the episode I did on women keepers, because you've in the United States fared better with female lighthouse keepers. Trinity House never appointed a woman keeper officially. Of course, through illness of keepers. Often their wives would stand in, if you like, but there was never an official principal keeper appointed by Trinity House. Some of the harbour boards, particularly the Liverpool harbours, did appoint female keepers. But I did an episode about female keepers. I managed to pull together various archive interviews that I found through the ALK and just enjoyed making that episode so much. It was great, great fun.
Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough, in interview terms, I managed to interview four former keepers this last weekend in Liverpool. And there is a former keeper called Chris Folds who served in several lighthouses, but in particular the Skerries off the Anglesey Peninsula in North Wales. And that's going to be a very, very, very enjoyable episode for season three.
I'm sure. So you've interviewed, I think the majority of your episodes are interviews with former keepers.
Yes, and mm-hmm. it's not intentional, but I just feel I should be prioritizing those for the very sad reason I suggested earlier that we are losing them, and so in a way, it's good to capture them while they're alive and well.
Yeah, you just largely answered the question I was about to ask, but what do you think is the value, aside from what you just said, but the value of a podcast like this?
Oh, I think if you attempt from a sort of archive perspective to interview a former keeper in this scenario, I think its potential is that it will very quickly become something very, very formal and stiff and not at all relaxed. And it might, yes, end up in a sound archive somewhere, but it's not necessarily a recording that would be particularly enjoyable to listen to. What I love about the podcast format is you're having a chat with somebody. And in fact, on some of the interviews I've done, I have almost disguised the fact that there's a recorder and a big red button in plain sight. And it has been literally just that, a conversation between two people talking about the job that they had and what their favourite reflections and recollections are. And I think that then captures the life of a lighthouse keeper for a much wider group of people than a sound recording would create.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't agree more. I think I'm after that same conversational quality what I do. But also, I think you'd agree that, I see these episodes of your podcast and my podcast as not just being a podcast, but also being basically an oral history project.
Completely agree with that. In fact, again, from the weekend I've just had, we have identified the need to effectively include in the ALK's digital archive the collection of the episodes of the podcast.
Mm-hmm. I do the same thing. I maintain the U.S. Lighthouse Society's digital archive, each episode in there as well. So yeah, they're saved in multiple places.
But you're right. I mean, there is such an interest in social history in general at the moment, and that kind of social history, oral history of a profession which no longer exists, is of paramount importance for future generations.
Absolutely. I concur. So you've had a co-host for some episodes, I think some of your recent episodes.
Yes, I have. I was actually in Norfolk at the ALK's AGM and annual dinner towards the end of last year. And I was chatting away with a lovely girl called Mel, who I'd met at various ALK events. And she started telling me that she and her mother listened avidly to the podcast, and there was always a race to see who could listen to it first. And she even described how she wasn't allowed to talk to her mother about it until the Sunday after it was published. Otherwise, there might be some spoilers. And I thought the notion that my podcast is generating enough interest to fear spoilers was really a step too far. But it very, very quickly became apparent that it was something that Mel would love to take part in. And I'm very, very keen to take some of the pressure off to, I mean, even doing seasons of 12 episodes, just having someone else, another voice,
right,
to talk with, I think is a good thing. And I think it's a step forward. And actually, again, in Liverpool, we were both there and we each interviewed some of the guests for season three. Mm-hmm. And I think just having an alternative to my voice all the time is no bad thing.
Well, I feel exactly the same way. If you've heard some of my episodes, you know that I almost, not always, but almost always have a co-host, and there are two women who are the primary co-hosts, but I have other people and sometimes men. But more often I've had women co-hosts, possibly for the same reason as you, where it breaks up people having to constantly listen to my voice and to have the contrast of a male and female voice, I think, works well.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's a very, very good thing. And so, funnily enough, having rushed to agree to do it, she then had several work deadlines, which meant that I sort of announced her very excitedly in about episode 9 of season 2, and then she barely played another part until the final episode. So it hasn't been an easy start for her, but season 3, she will be playing a much more active part. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, excellent. So moving back to something you mentioned earlier, you were diagnosed with MS. Did you say that was about 2012? Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's right. It was in 2012. And yeah, I'd had various weird sort of sensations and nerve pains at various times throughout my adult life, but had never really joined the dots. And then in 2012, I was away on holiday with the family, and almost overnight, I couldn't walk. I woke up one morning on holiday, and it felt as if I'd lost the ability to walk, and every step I took just took every ounce of energy I had. And it was just the weirdest sensation. And what followed were months and months of diagnostics and tests and so on. But yes, eventually I was diagnosed as having relapsing and remitting MS, which for listeners who don't know, if you're going to be diagnosed with MS, relapsing and remitting is the one to have. But it did, you know, they always say avoid stress if you can, and they want you to sort of reduce the stresses and strains in your life. So it just provided an opportunity that perhaps I should have taken many years before, but it gave me the opportunity to think, okay, we don't need to live in London. I don't need to be traveling across London every day to go into an office. And I just chose to transform my life, I suppose.
How are you doing now?
Well, I have been on a specific medication for the last 4 years, which hasn't cured me by any means, of course, but it has slowed down the symptoms that used to routinely appear. And at the moment, my health is stable.
Fantastic. So that leads us to my next question, which is, what made you decide to do a 100-day, 3,500-mile bike ride to lighthouses?
Well, I mean, if I was going to do a 3,500-mile bike ride at all, it would have to include lighthouses. I certainly wouldn't be cycling that far for any other reason. Well, it relates back to my childhood, having the lighthouse from Dungeness flash on my bedroom wall. Once I realised what it was and that catalyst had been lit, if you like. I very, very early on, I mean, in my pre-teenage, decided that one day when I was older, I was going to set off on my bike and go and visit every lighthouse. I was naive at the time and imagined knocking on a door and a man in a very smart blazer and cap would open the door and show me around back then. And of course, that's not what eventually happened. But I always had in mind that one day I would do this adventure, have this adventure. And of course, life gets in the way. I grew up, I went to university, I got a job. I met my wife-to-be, we got married. And it never happened. And really, that was one of the results of my MS diagnosis. And I thought, well, if not now, then when? MS is a very unpredictable condition to have. I started taking drugs which slowly brought my walking ability back again. And my symptoms were reasonably, they didn't impact my life too much once I'd started taking medication. And so I thought, well, while my health is stable, why don't I take a sabbatical and do that thing that I thought I would do back when I was a kid? So I sort of resurrected an idea from 40 years earlier.
And how many lighthouses did you see on the trip?
Well, I mean, of course, and I'm sure you have this debate with so many people, as do I. Of course, it depends on your definition of a lighthouse. But
yes,
I did see 327 structures, which I at least count as lighthouses. I mean, some of them were harbour lights, some of them were lights on poles. Some were, I mean, the foundations of former lighthouses, which haven't been lighthouses for many, many, many decades.
Right.
But one way or another, Jeremy, I saw 327 of them.
No matter how you look at it, that's unbelievably impressive. But what you just said strikes me funny because I know a couple, but actually, sadly, the man has recently passed away, but they did many of the U.S. Lighthouse Society tours over the years, and I did two of the tours with them. And when we were in 2017, we did Scotland, but mostly the Edinburgh area, the south, right, southeast corner, and then down some of the east coast of England. And they always, you know, there was a certain itinerary we were trying to follow, but they would say, oh, there's this light, you know, it's only a mile that way. We really need to see that, and we go see it. And it was just some little steel pole with a light on it, you know.
Correct.
But to them, correct, it was important to see it. So everybody has a different view on these things.
Yeah, it's interesting. The ALK is very similar, Jeremy, in that we have members who are literally they are lighthouse baggers. They have a list of lighthouses. They have a list of things they want to see, and they tick them off one by one.
Yes.
And then we have others who are either former keepers or historians or academics who have a very, very strict definition of what counts and what doesn't count as a lighthouse.
Right.
And you know, on an ALK event, they barely get out of the coach if they know it's a structure that they don't count. And all the lighthouse baggers wander off with their list to tick them off. So it's a very interesting thing that there are clearly many definitions and different motivations to what people want to go and see and visit.
Absolutely. I think I'm somewhere in the great middle of that.
Me too. Absolutely. But although inevitably the cycle ride did become a lighthouse bagging event. I think I'd got 1,000 miles before I was in danger of missing out on one because the sea was very rough and various boat trips were cancelled. But eventually, I think I can honestly say that I didn't miss a single one.
Yeah. So these 327 lighthouses are in England, Scotland, and Wales, right? No,
England and Wales. I didn't do the Scottish.
Didn't do case. Scotland. Okay.
England, Wales, and the Channel Islands.
That's enough.
It's an, well, 327 is enough. And I couldn't have cycled another mile. I mean, 3,500 miles was plenty, Jeremy. It really was.
Yeah. So Scotland has how many more lighthouses? Will that be your next bike ride?
So Scotland is at least the same again, if not more. It's a large undertaking, and if you just do the mainland Scottish lighthouses, that is an achievable cycle ride. But if you're going to visit them all in the same way that I did for England and Wales, it would need a lot more than 100 days because there are so many offshore islands.
Yeah, you can't exactly bike to Bell Rock.
You absolutely can't bike to Bell Rock. But then you've got the Shetland Isles, you've got the Orkney Isles, you've got the Western Isles. I mean, it's a vast undertaking. I do still have in mind I might do it. I might not do it by bicycle.
Mm-hmm. So before you did this amazing journey, were you an avid bike rider before that?
I'm ashamed to admit, Jeremy, no, I wasn't an avid bike rider before I set off. And in fact, I hadn't cycled since I lived in London in the 1990s, where I did use a bike each day to commute to work. But that bicycle was rolled into the shed when we moved out of London in 1997, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't think I cycled at all until about 2 or 3 weeks before I set off on the bike ride.
Wow. That makes it even more impressive. That's
well, or foolhardy.
Well, a little bit of both, but I mean, you achieved your goal.
Well, I achieved my goal, but I think it's fair to say that I never mastered cycling uphill, and I spent many, many hours over the course of the 100 days pushing my bike uphill along very steep, long roads that never seemed to quite get to the top. So I was very, very good at cycling on the flat. And gosh, cycling downhill was fun. I never mastered cycling uphill.
Yeah. Well, I'm just so impressed with what you did. So where did you stay along the way?
Well, that was the really lovely thing, because although I had the time to take off my work, I didn't really have the money. So staying in hotels for 100 days was absolutely not going to be possible. But the ALK put me in touch with members who lived on the coast, and several were able to offer me a bed for the night and a meal and some company. And then through a wonderful charity that I was raising money for called Shift MS, which is a kind of social media for younger people diagnosed with MS, they put me in touch with their membership database, and I got several offers of accommodation through them. And then I was very lucky to get a very nice article written in the Weekend Telegraph, which is one of the UK national newspapers. And several readers of that article got in touch and offered me beds for the night. So I reckon I probably had a third of the beds for the night covered through those three. And then the rest were bed and breakfast, small hotels. Really, I opened the accommodation app on my iPhone at sort of 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon on any day where I didn't have accommodation and just picked whatever was the cheapest bed I could find for the night.
So you just mentioned Shift MS.
Yes, it's a relatively new charity. It was set up by a lovely guy called George Pepper, who I think was diagnosed with MS in his 20s. And of course, it has a much bigger impact on your mental health, your family life, and so on, if you're diagnosed that young. And he used the diagnosis to set up a charity aimed primarily for younger people who've been diagnosed with MS. And it's a phenomenally worthy and good cause. I'm what's called an ambassador for the charity. I'm a fundraising ambassador. And the cycle ride, we did raise £15,000, about $20,000, I guess, for that charity during the bike ride.
That's fantastic. Did you have a certain goal you were trying to reach, or
I didn't, but I mean, 15,000 would have exceeded it.
Yeah.
if I had set a budget or a target, I don't think I would have set it at that level.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That you, if you had a goal, I figured you probably exceeded it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you kept a blog of the journey, which people can see online at thebeaconbike.co.uk, if I had
that
right.
Yeah, thebeaconbike.co.uk.
Yeah.
And yes, that is the sort of blog of the journey. Yes, indeed.
And was that the basis for your new book?
It was. I mean, both the blog and writing the book became a lockdown project. I had started but not finished the book several times, and then COVID happened, lockdown happened. Of course, the medication I was taking dampens my immune system, so I was in this country told to shield, which was basically to avoid contact of any sort, really. So I had best part of 18 months really staying indoors, and certainly not in company. And so it just provided a great opportunity to dig out my journals and write retrospectively the blog of the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And then using those same notes, I turned it into a book.
So your book, the title of your book is The Beacon Bike, and it's being published soon. We're actually speaking on March 28th. I think the book is coming in April. Do I have that right?
Yes, it's almost exactly a month away. It's published on the 25th of April by Icon Books in the UK. It's going to be a hardback. It's going to be an audiobook, and there's an ebook version as well.
Excellent. And will it be available in the US as well as the UK?
Yes, it should be. Icon have worldwide distribution, and they have arrangements in place with other publishers for distributing through the to the US. So I believe it will be available in bookshops and certainly on Amazon,
right,
in the US. Yes, absolutely.
That's great news. And aside from the story of your incredible journey to lighthouses and everything else, but would you say there's a central message to the book?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I was taken by the Shift MS motto, which is that MS doesn't mean giving up on your dreams. It just means finding a different way to achieve them. And the reason that was so important to me was early in my diagnosis, I joined various programs and events and social activities for MS sufferers, things like coffee mornings. And I very quickly withdrew from them all because I found them really an excuse for a lot of people to meet up and moan about their condition and about all the symptoms that they'd suffered from that week. And I didn't feel it was doing me very much positive good at all. And so I guess the central message of the book is I had a childhood dream. I thought that childhood dream ended finally and for good the day I was diagnosed with MS. And through positive organizations like Shift MS and the ALK and friends and family, I just thought, well, with a few adaptations, maybe I could do this. So, for example, I thought initially maybe I would use an electric bike rather than a pedal bike. but it just so happened that the phase of the timings when I could actually take time off work, my health was particularly stable and I felt pretty good. And so I just decided that I would tackle it anyway. And I was able to change how I took my medication each day. And I just think, yes, the message is don't give up on your dreams too soon. Too soon.
I was about to say, you could kind of boil the message down to don't give up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody can take inspiration from, for sure. So I have three more questions for you, and these are for bonus points, okay?
Okay, excellent. Well, I hope I managed to pass all three.
Okay. I'm sure you – well, I don't want to predict, but I don't want to put too much pressure on you here.
Okay.
Okay, the first of the three bonus questions is the Dungeness – and I always want to say Dungeness, but I know the proper English pronunciation is Dungeness, right?
It is. It is pronounced Dungeness as opposed to Dungeness, but I don't think anyone would criticize you. It's a pretty good attempt.
Last week I was at the new Dungeness, as we say Dungeness, lighthouse in Washington State. I was just there. So,
well, that's interesting because when I was looking for stock images of Dungeness, I kept seeing lighthouses that purported to be Dungeness, and I thought it's nothing like it.
Right. No, they're not even remotely similar.
No.
But anyway, so the Dungeness lighthouse obviously has a place in your heart, as you talked about earlier. Indeed. Do you have any other favorite lighthouses?
I couldn't possibly not list Lundy Old Lighthouse in the list. I had my honeymoon there. It was a joyful time of my life. So I would absolutely have to include Lundy Old Lighthouse, and also a lighthouse opposite Lundy called Heartland Point, which is a very remote lighthouse on a sort of extended low down reef of rocks, and it's a very dramatic lighthouse. Sadly, quite a lot of the ancillary accommodation has been demolished now, but it was a substantial building with enough accommodation for three lighthouse families, plus a very bright lighthouse until its light was reduced in the 2000s. And again, I'd have to list that as a dramatic lighthouse. Again, because when you're on Lundy, it's a constant point that you can see from Lundy back to the Devon coast. It's a very beautiful lighthouse. So I would say Dungeness, the old light on Lundy, and Heartland Point.
Okay, I give you credit for that answer. Your next to last bonus question is, what do you enjoy most about doing the podcast Keeping Watch?
Oh, definitely hearing stories of the slightly reckless nonconformist stories that come out of lighthouse keepers' mouths, when little things that they couldn't possibly have talked about while they were serving in the lighthouse service. Because Trinity House was a very traditional, very formal organization. And so you can almost hear the naughtiness in the tone of voice of the keepers that I talk to when they relay a tale of something naughty that they did. That, to me, hearing those stories and knowing that I am contributing to potentially an oral history that people will listen to in 100 years' time. That's what I enjoy the most.
Me too.
Great.
Okay, so I have one final question for bonus points, for extra bonus points.
Extra bonus points.
What did you enjoy most about your 100-day bike ride to lighthouses?
Oh, that's a real toughie. That's a real toughie.
Well, it doesn't have to be just one thing.
Okay, I'll give you two. And for different reasons. So my first was not lighthouse related in any way, shape or form. MS is a strange condition and can have all sorts of side effects. And for some reason, 1,500 miles into this cycle ride, I suffered chronic low mood and depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I just despaired on more than one occasion. And for several days in a row, I would stop by the side of a road, get off my bike, sit in a sort of gateway to a field and just sob without any real reason or understanding why. And funnily enough, one of the turning points was getting to the beach at, I think it's Crosby, on the northwest coast, where there is an art installation, an installation by Anthony Gormley, who's a sculptor. And the installation is called Another Place. And it comprises more than 100 static metal statues of a person staring out to sea, all in different parts of the beach, some submerged even at high, even at low tide, some on the sands of the beach. And there was something so beautiful, so calming, so utterly mesmerizing that I think caused a positive turnaround to my mood seeing it. So there's one. The other, it relates, I'm very to a very lovely woman who read the article in the Sunday newspaper about my expedition. And she was at the time renting the cottage, or one of the cottages, at the Lizard Lighthouse in Cornwall. She planned to be away in London during the sort of May school holiday. And so just about after 1,000 miles, I was reaching that stretch of the Cornish coast, and she offered me the use of her cottage for the week of my children's school half term. And it was the first time I'd seen the family since setting off, and we had just the most idyllic week. It was the end of May. The sun came out. It was probably the first time when people were going down to the beach for a swim that year. And it was a very, very, very special week to have. And it was staying in a lighthouse, and a really dramatic one at that. The Lizard is a very beautiful lighthouse.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing those wonderful memories.
Did I pass?
You absolutely, you get an A++++.
Wow, that's marvelous.
You get a gold star on your forehead too.
Gold star as well. Oh,
yeah. Fantastic. I don't know if they do that in England, but when I was a kid, the teacher would put a gold star on your forehead if you did something really.
They used to stick them in our books, but I don't think they ever stuck them on my forehead. No.
Okay, well, you get one. You get a metaphorical one today, anyway.
Fantastic.
But I hope we haven't revealed any spoilers for your book, or too many, anyway. But I'm sure there's a lot more. Obviously.
Well, I don't think I have, no, and I'm delighted to talk about the book. It's a rare opportunity. I have written books before, but they've all been sort of business and computing titles, and so frankly, the queue of people wanting to talk to me about them was very, very small indeed. So I'm delighted to have this opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure those other books had their importance as well, but I'm looking forward so much to reading this, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will.
Well, thank you very much.
To it as well.
And so, thank you for inviting me on the podcast. I've had such fun.
Likewise, Ed, I can't thank you enough for spending this time with me, and I hope we can do it again. And
sure we can, and I hope you will join me on the Keeping Watch podcast for an episode in season 3.
Well, it's a deal. Absolutely. I appreciate that thought very much. So, Ed, as I said, I think before we officially started the interview, I said that there's probably hundreds of subjects we could talk about. There's some we could talk about every lighthouse in the UK and every lighthouse in the US. Could go on and on and on. But it's just wonderful sharing this time with you. And congratulations on everything you've accomplished with the bike ride and the book and everything else in your podcast. You know, it's
well, thank you. And as I say, it has been a real privilege to join you today.
Well, again, Edward Peppett, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jeremy.
To learn more about the Association of Lighthouse Keepers, visit alk.org.uk. You can listen to Ed Pepitt's podcast, Keeping Watch, using any podcast app, and you can also find it right on the ALK website. And to learn more about Shift MS, the social network and community for people with multiple sclerosis, go to shift.ms.
You know, at first, it kind of made me a little nervous when I found out about your podcast and Ed's podcast. I think I found out about both of them pretty close together. And it meant that I was no longer the only Lighthouse podcast. This was no longer the only one. But now I think it's great. Even in cases where Ed and I have interviewed the same people, what we choose to focus on, of course, is different. Because they're not the same people. And people can learn different things by listening to both. And your podcast is a different style as well. It's more of a deep dive into the history of individual lighthouses.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because I remember when I had the idea to start my podcast, I thought it was the only one. And I was like, oh, this is like a super niche thing. You know, people, it'll definitely be the only lighthouse podcast out there. And then I saw yours and I was like, heartbroken. I'm like, oh, no. Like, my idea is not original, but... yeah, we've definitely covered very different subjects, and I think they actually complement each other pretty well if listeners wanted to listen to all three or both.
That's exactly what I think. You know, I've totally come around to that idea, you know, I recommend that people listen to all three for sure. And as I told you when I interviewed you, you both have great voices, and it's just
thank you.
Pleasure to listen to for the interplay between the two of you, certainly. So do you, by any chance, as we get into spring here, we're recording this on April 9th, do you and Vince have any plans to visit lighthouses this year?
We do. We're going to Cape Cod in August, so towards the summer, and we'll get to see Nauset Light and Highland Light, and then we're also going to hike to Long Point, and I believe it's Wood End is the one that's on Long Point as well.
Wood End. Well, that's not on Long Point, but they're walkable from one to the other. It's yeah. If you like walking in sand, you know, I hope you do, because
we're planning on it. But
I don't know if you can give any preview of what might be coming up in your podcast, any topics you're going to be covering.
Yeah, I'll give a little. So the day after this post, so on April 15th, we have our 50th episode special coming out, and that one's over the Statue of Liberty, which Lighthouse just for over just a little bit over a decade. So it's kind of a fun story, a bunch of history and pretty short part on lighthouses, but the rest of it's really cool. And then after that, we'll be covering some Cape Cod lights and possibly some international ones. So
great. Congratulations on 50 episodes.
Thank you. It kind of pales in comparison to what you've got going on, but we can have
dreams. Like I said, I don't think it was the best idea to do a podcast every single week for 5 years, but I'm happy I've done it, but it might be time for a break. But I love the idea of the Statue of Liberty, using that as the topic, because a lot of people don't realize it was not only an official aid to navigation for some years, it was pretty much the first, if you want to call it a lighthouse, to be electrified in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, we talk a lot about the struggle of all mm-hmm. that happening. But so, it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, I don't want to give everything away, so people need to listen to that. So, Emily, I really appreciate you doing this today. And I want to thank you again for focusing on the U.S. Lighthouse Society on your podcast. I know you had one episode that was pretty much devoted to it. And I was listening to another recent one where you talked about the membership levels for USLHS.
Yeah, absolutely. We use the USLHS archives for almost all of our episodes, and I've had a membership for a couple years, so we love to get the word out there.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, we have the research catalog, the J. Candace Clifford Lighthouse Research Catalog. I don't know if you use that, but there's also on the regular USLHS.org website, there's so many historical articles that you can reference. So it's nice to know that people are using that. So speaking of U.S. Lighthouse Society, I want to remind everyone to check out uslhs.org to learn more about all the things the U.S. Lighthouse Society offers, including tours and preservation grants. Remember that donations and memberships help to support this podcast. Emily, please remind everyone again about the name of your podcast and how people can hear it.
Yeah. My podcast is The Lighthouse Lowdown, and you can listen in at thelighthouselowdown.com and anywhere you listen to your podcasts.
Excellent. You know, I'm thinking that you and Vince and Ed Peppett and I should form an organization, the Association of Lighthouse Podcasters, or we can call it ALP for short. We could hold our annual conventions at our favorite lighthouses. What do you think?
Yeah, the ALP. I'm so into that.
We should.
It'd be a fight to which favorite lighthouse we visit each year.
We could probably reach some consensus, but, you know, they're all good. So with that, to all our regular listeners and our new ones, thanks so much for listening and
keep a good light. Shine, little shine, little shine. Let it shine.